Welcome to the IRIS podcast. You're listening to a talk as part of the Designing Longitudinal Research in Complex Multiprofessional Environments conference, organised by the Scottish Child Care and Protection Network. This talk was recorded on the 21st of April 2011. Emma McWilliam, Her Majesty's Inspectorate for Education, An Inspector's View, Quantifying Intervention and Outcomes.
I'm very pleased to be here, although a little awestruck, having been here yesterday as well by the speakers, all of whom are very eminent researchers, and I'm afraid that my presentation is somewhat more applied, shall we say, and it starts without any slides whatsoever, so I hope what I have to say will be useful to the matter under consideration. For the past 4.5 years, I've been working as an inspector in a multidisciplinary services for children team, and I've had the privilege of working with colleagues from police, education, including education psychologists, from nursing, child protection nurse advisors, consultant paediatricians, from social work, of course, my own particular discipline, and other people in the team have come from experiences such as working for the Children's Reporters Department. So a wealth of experience. And the main focus of our work has been joint inspections of services to protect children. So what I'm hoping to share with you today is specific aspects of our inspection methodology, which I hope will be relevant to considering the design of longitudinal research to evaluate the effectiveness of interventions by staff from across services in improving experience and outcomes for children in need of care and protection. So between 2005 and 2009, the first multi-agency child protection inspections were carried out across 30 local authority areas in Scotland. There are in total 32 local authority areas in Scotland, and the other two had already been used to pilot the methodology. There was no precedent for inspecting the collective impact of child protection work, principally undertaken by police, health, education and social work and the Scottish Children's Reporters Administration, but also other council services such as housing, community learning and development, libraries and leisure, etc. And also, very importantly, the third sector in terms of voluntary and independent providers of services. New legislation was passed, accompanied by regulations and a code of practice in February 2006, to provide members of each inspection team with the necessary powers and ethical basis to access and share information. The first programme of joint inspections of services to protect children provided baseline information about how well we protect Scotland's children. A report summarising the findings of these inspections can be found on the HMIE website. Services to protect children were evaluated across 18 quality indicators using a 6-point scale from unsatisfactory to excellent. Results of CP1 inspections, as I will now refer to these, were variable, with some local authority areas performing well, while in others there were significant concerns about poor performance. Overall, areas for improvement were identified nationally in key processes of information sharing, assessment of risks and needs, and in planning for individual children, which to varying degrees had diminished the impact and outcomes for children. In February 2009, ministers requested that a second 3-year programme of child protection inspections take place, which is due for completion by March 2012. Some of our experiences of applying the methodology from this current programme of joint inspections of services to protect children which I will now refer to as CP2, will, I think, be of particular interest to you. This revised methodology built on the learning from CP1, but also took account of recommendations laid down by Crerar in his report on the scrutiny of public services. In CP1, we carried out the same inspection activities in each local authority area. In CP2, we have moved to an intelligence-led, proportionate approach, starting with evidence from joint self-evaluation presented by chief officers and child protection committees. We also have tried to develop approaches to increasing the involvement of children and families who use child protection services, though I'd have to say not always with as much success as we would have liked. The revised methodology also had to ensure that it promoted the implementation of a number of government policies, including Getting It Right for Every Child, the Early Years Framework, and Equally Well Implementation Plan. We have also fundamentally changed our approach from a backward-looking evaluation of practice to becoming more forward-looking with the aim of building capacity for change and improvement. So the relevant aspects of CP2 methodology which I'd like to share with you are analysing practice through reading children's records, audit trails of children in the sample with a child's network of support, or the team around the child as it's sometimes referred to, and interviews with children, parents and carers. Questionnaires to parents whose children's names have been removed from the child protection register and who still have the care of their children, and interactive computer programs to ascertain the views of children whose names are or have been on the child protection register. Firstly, analysing practice through reading children's records. Inspection teams, as I've said, are multidisciplinary, and each inspector in a team is allocated a number of children in a case sample to read all the records for that individual child. This consists of records from health, the health visitor or school nurse record, from education, which is the pupil progress record, often with a child protection school file attached, children and families social work records, Scottish Children's Reporter Administration records, and police records. The latter actually don't exist in reality, but are made up specifically for inspections by police printing off information relevant to a child from their databases. On some of our inspections, services have chosen to give us additional children's records, and they've added to these, for example, educational psychology records, voluntary sector records, or additional social work records such as residential children's home records. So you can see that we have quite an extensive array of records about these very vulnerable children. What we have learned is that having one inspector reading all of a child's records enables them to gain an overview of how well services are working together to improve outcomes for a particular vulnerable child and family. We're also able to evaluate how well key processes underpinning this were working and progress in implementing the GIRFEC approach, including early identification of concerns about a child and intervention to prevent difficulties arising or getting worse, appropriate information sharing across services, and aggregating of chronologies of significant events in a child's life, and integrated assessments of risks and needs, and a single multi-agency child's plan, and one series of meetings to review the impact of the plan. When an inspector doesn't understand some aspect of practice from another discipline, they're readily able to seek advice from another team member with relevant knowledge and experience. This whole child approach to reading children's records is, in our experience, invaluable. We've therefore continued to replicate that from CP1 inspections into CP2 inspections. In our role as link inspectors to child protection committees, we've also supported and trained multi-agency cohorts of staff to adopt the same approach to conducting internal quality audits of children's records. And in their in these situations, they do so having obtained written consent from the child and their parents, which does not usually prove to be a problem. In CP2 inspections, our case file sample in each local authority area consists of a sample of children whose names are currently on the Child Protection Register, and those whose names have been removed during the preceding 12-month period. This case sample is statistically valid with a 90% confidence level and 15% variance, enabling us to generalise from our findings to assertions about all children whose names are on or have recently been removed from the Child Protection Register. In addition to that, we select a small but not statistically valid sample of children with recent involvement in child protection systems, but who did not end up with their name being placed on the Child Protection Register as a result. An example of that would be children who've been subject to a child protection investigation, but then that hasn't proceeded to registration. This assists us in evaluating the consistency of thresholds for registering children's names in the Child Protection Register and the effectiveness of services to vulnerable children and families where risks fall just below the threshold for registration. We're very mindful that Lord Laming, in his 2009 progress report, stated that children who fall just short of needing a child protection plan are placed at particular risk of suffering harm when services are not provided for them. Another comment I would make based on what we saw yesterday was the concern we have that there are very few adolescents whose names are on the Child Protection Register. In CP1, we placed a lot of emphasis on evaluating the impact of key processes. In CP2, we have a much stronger focus on evaluating improvements in the well-being of vulnerable children, and we focus on current practice in the previous 12 to 18 months. So how do we do this? We evaluate what staff do together on a day-to-day basis to reduce risks and better meet children's needs. And we do that against four impact quality indicators which form part of a framework produced by Services for Children team to support joint self-evaluation. And these four impact quality indicators cover specific themes. Children and families' experiences of communication and trusting relationships with staff, the effectiveness of support at an early stage for vulnerable children and families to prevent difficulties arising or getting worse, action taken to give children the knowledge and skills to keep themselves safe, the immediate response by staff to children who may be at risk of significant harm, and children and families' experiences in the circumstances where there's an investigation. And finally, how well children's short and longer term needs are met and the impact of the help they receive to recover from abuse and neglect. So I've put an additional handout which will give you details of these quality indicators that we're using to evaluate the impact and outcomes of what staff are doing together. Actively support and encourage child protection committees to use these quality indicators to achieve improvements in outcomes for children through self-evaluation. So I think it's fair to say that across Scotland, staff working in children's services are at quite different stages in developing self-evaluation skills, from which they're able to demonstrate that they're delivering tangible improvements. Those who are furthest ahead are able to demonstrate positive differences they're making over time in the lives of vulnerable children and families. Inspectors go about reading children's records by first understanding the child's story. They usually do this through identifying the most recent reports for a child protection case conference or children's hearing. They then look for evidence of improvements staff from different services have made to a child's circumstances in the context of the impact quality indicators. So, for example, when considering the quality indicator about trusting relationships between children and staff, inspectors ask themselves what evidence is there of this child having a trusting relationship with a member of staff who sees them regularly and has got to know them well. They may find evidence in case notes, reports submitted to meetings, parents and children's own reports to meetings, recording of professional supervision. In fact, you have to look in all sorts of different places. And once inspectors have finished reading the child's records, they reflect at some length on the benefits to the child and their family of the services they have received and consider carefully whether there have been improvements in the child's well-being as a result. Inspectors make use of the Shinari indicators of well-being: safe, healthy, active, nurtured, achieving, respected, responsible, and included, to evaluate how well children's needs have been met. You can see that it's quite a complex process in terms of being outcome focused in the way that we read children's records. Once we have evaluative statements under quality indicators about the individual children we've read about, we then aggregate those findings up to a higher level of analysis to gain a picture of the main findings emerging from the case file sample as a whole. Although practice is becoming more outcome focused, at present the evidence we are looking for cannot be found in a specific place in children's records and may require an inspector to carry out the evaluation for themselves of improvements in outcomes. And the process therefore does depend heavily on the knowledge, expertise and professional judgments of inspectors. From an ethical point of view, inspectors have an agreed process in place for raising concerns if they read about a child who, in their view, is at risk currently, or who has been receipt of such a poor service over a prolonged period of time that has had a substantially adverse impact on the child's well-being. I'll just pause there because the other two things I want to briefly cover are not as detailed as that. What we then do is we want to triangulate our findings, and so we do that by interviewing staff and service users for the case sample that we have read about. We ask in CP2 services to identify a lead professional and the membership of the child's network of support. In some local authority areas, this GERFEC approach is far more established than in others. So after reading a child's records, an inspector may add or delete staff from the list that has been provided on the basis of what they have read. What we will then do is we will meet with this network of support and we'll pursue lines of questioning that have arisen from reading the case record. It's apparent that staff in some networks of support have established good working relationships with each other, are well coordinated and effective in implementing and reviewing an agreed action plan for an individual child. And you pick that up very readily from meeting with people, because you will get everything from an extreme where some groups of people don't know who each other are to those who are clearly very industriously involved in working intensively on a day-to-day basis with each other. 50% of the children whose names are on the Child Protection Register are under five, and that severely limits the number of children whose views we can realistically ascertain. But we do interview children from about 7 years of age upwards, depending on the appropriateness and willingness of the individual child to meet with an inspector. We interview all parents of children in our sample who are willing to meet with an inspector, including relevant extended family members such as kinship carers. We're happy to interview children, parents and carers in an environment where they feel most comfortable, including in their own homes. We do not interview children and parents together. We suggest that children and parents might like to have a support person who knows them well present during the interview. We do not discuss details of abuse during interviews with children and parents. We are asking open questions such as what has helped improve your child's situation, or what has made the difference to your circumstances as a family. With younger children, we may use drawings as a way of trying to elicit their views as well. When we have interviewed these networks of support and children and parents and carers, the evidence that we find may further strengthen what we found from reading the case records, or it may place a different weighting on what we thought we had found, or if, in fact, in some cases, it produces contradictions. But it's a very useful way of triangulating the evidence from reading the case records. So that's that aspect of what we do. We issue We use questionnaires for parents whose children's names have been removed from the register but who still have the care of their children. Now, thinking behind that was that they would be in a position, hopefully, to tell us what had improved as a result of that experience of having been through the child protection system and successfully maintaining care of their children. So we go about that by asking child protection committees to issue these questionnaires on our behalf, because they have the data systems from which they can do that. But the responses come back directly to ourselves, and we issue stamped addressed envelopes. So we actually, they're anonymised. We don't know who these people actually are, other than that they have had their child's name in the register and they live in a particular local authority area. We developed the questionnaire that we use through working with staff who were very involved with parents whose children were in the Child Protection Register, and with some parents who've been in that position themselves. However, what we find is that the return rate is low, and the view of people who've been involved in this experience of developing and using these questionnaires chimes with something that was raised yesterday. Our view is that there would need to be a financial incentive for these parents, such as a voucher to buy food and clothing from a local supermarket, in order to promote the completion of these forms, particularly given the complexities of the lifestyles of the kind of families we're trying to seek information from. Finally, the other area that we have developed was interactive computer programs, which were just mentioned there, for children who are or have had their names in the Child Protection Register. And we developed two programs for different age bands of children. And we did so by involving some young people themselves of the different ages in the design of these programs, and also worked with an advocacy service that worked with children, the Child Protection Register, run by a voluntary sector organisation. And we did so in partnership with a company called Viewpoint, who I think are known quite widely throughout the UK. We piloted the use of these programmes on the CP2 inspections. And what we found, I think, very much was in tune with research that's been done about what the benefits may or may not be of using a computerised system. We found that children were keen to use this method, that they found it an enjoyable experience, and that the information they provided was much richer than what we got through interviews, and more honest as well. The children themselves said that they were much more inclined to say what they truly felt when speaking to a computer than through speaking to an adult interviewer. We made the program accessible to them on a laptop, and the completed programs could be aggregated into management reports instantly through the provider's server. However, sadly, this approach was discontinued following the pilot due to financial considerations. And I think the experience has led us to also ask whether parents might not also find using a computerised system very beneficial, because we know from studies, for example, of mothers with alcohol problems, that they're much more likely to be truthful when giving information into a computer about how much they drink than what they will do to an interviewer. So those are the areas that I wanted to share with you that I thought were most likely to have some relevance to the topic of consideration here today about devising methodology for longitudinal study of the most vulnerable children and families, is the reading of children's records that we do, the audit trails with interviews of groups of the network of support around a child, parents and children's interviews, and some of the attempts we've made to involve what are very hard-to-reach users of services through a questionnaire and through a computer program. So that was what I hoped would be helpful to share with you this morning.
Thank you very much.
This recording is copyright of Iris 2011. It may be reused in the terms of Creative Commons licenses, attribution, non-commercial, share-alike 2.5, UK Scotland license. Go to www.iris.org.uk for more information.